This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Sevior plays it off the wall. Wheeler keeps it in. Jokinen alone in front. He scores! What a move! Waited for Thomas to make the initial play, and then Jokinen finishes it off. That's his 16th of the year, and 29 seconds into the second period, the Jets are in front 4-2.
Halfway through the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, you're listening to TSN 1290, Saturday, April 19th, 2014. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for the soon-to-be-returning Drew Mindell, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, Ezra Ginsberg, Timmy Debenhab, and Michael Remus. All decks are on hand here at the Pamina Studios, and we're going to talk about Olli Jokinen and what jersey he'll be wearing next year. But Ezzy, during the break, left and came in with a Hot 103 jersey.
That's right. You know, I'm rocking the Hot 103 jersey, now part of the Bell Media team here at the station, and just supporting our friends Ace and Chrissy Troy and Lloyd the intern. Is he there still?
We'll be tweeting.
Is he still an intern?
I'm not sure if he's an intern anymore.
Yeah, so I'm just rocking the jersey, you know, getting ready for the Raps and Brooklyn Nets coming up a little bit later, supporting my boy DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry and all those great players that play for the Raptors. This is big.
Remus says it's actually Virgin 103 now, Ezzy, and it's...
what did I say? Hot 103?
Lloyd is still the intern.
Yeah, Virgin. Virgin 103. Sorry, got to get that right.
Now, Olli Jokinen, I want to hear people's opinions on this, so if you could tweet us at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Dave is going to read us some of the tweets that we get in terms of what to do with Jokinen. Do you think the Jets should bring him back? Do you think the Jets should re-sign him? If so, what do you think they should re-sign him for? And we had an analysis on IllegalCurve.com about Olli Jokinen and what he is worth in on the open market. You know, he's a veteran guy. He's over 35 years old now. He's 35 years old, and you got a guy who's played many years. He's played all over. He's played in Phoenix. He's played in Florida. He's played in L.A. He's played in Calgary twice. Played in the Rangers. So, I mean, you know, in Winnipeg. He's played everywhere. He's a guy who used to be a scoring center and still puts up some points, but certainly not the level that he once did, especially in Florida. He came into Winnipeg on a two-year, $4.5 million per year deal two summers ago. A deal that, was, for all intents and purposes, was a poor contract. Kevin Cheveldayoff, if he had it to do it over again, he may not tell you he wouldn't sign Olli Jokinen, but I suspect he probably wouldn't sign Olli Jokinen. So you had a situation now where Mark Scheifele certainly surprised me with his progression last year, how quickly that happened, and jumped into a top six role. Brian Little is another one of your top six centers. So Olli Jokinen, if he's coming back, is going to come back as a third line center. So the question is, we know that there's a need at third line center. So the question is Olli Jokinen that third line center for your team? And if he is, what is he worth? So let me ask you this question first. Let's split it into two. And I don't think these issues are mutually exclusive, granted, so I will say that. But first question for the both of you. Do you think, would you bring Olli Jokinen back to play third line center, contract notwithstanding?
That's a good question, Richie. I think, with the contract notwithstanding, because as you mentioned, he is going to ask for similar type of money that he was asking for these last 2 years, a little bit less. But yeah,
we'll talk about that in a second.
Not that far away.
Forget the money.
Right.
Center need on your team. Third line center need. Is he the guy you want to play third line center?
No.
Okay.
And I think that the reason for me that it's no, and Olli Jokinen had a great year. He played all 82 games, and he had 16 goals and 40 points, whatever it was. I don't have it right in front of me, but it was something like that.
43 points.
43 points. So, you know, he had a good year, but in the lockout shortened year, he didn't have a good year, and he was expected to play that second-line center role. Mm-hmm. I think he did a good job after Mark Scheifele developed into the second-line center, because earlier on in the season, he was a third-line center. But the reason for me he doesn't fit in as a third-line center, he's not very good on faceoffs. He's never been a good faceoff guy, and I think you need a good faceoff guy to complement Jim Slater, because Brian Little and Mark Scheifele guys aren't necessarily that great at faceoffs either. So I think, to me, that's one thing.
Bring Bermistrov back too. He can't win a draw either.
That's an issue with Bermistrov. He would definitely have to improve his faceoffs, Richie. Yeah. But for me, Olli Jokinen is not physical enough. I think the Jets need a third line that can not only score but can establish a forecheck, and mm-hmm. they've had varying degrees of success with Halaschuk and Tangrady, but nothing I think that you can say that the third line is set in stone. I think the third line is something in free agency that needs to address. So for me, Ole Jokinen cannot play that third line center role, even though he contributes offensively. He had stretches here towards the end of the season. It was 8, 9, 10 games where he only had one goal. So to me, even though he had a better year, he's not good enough offensively to replace what a third line grinding center who's good at faceoffs can offer for the Winnipeg Jets. So even without the contract, I think they should explore bringing in someone in either through free agency or from the farm team, St. John's, even though right now I think we'd agree nobody's ready to take that role. Adam Lowry, to me, is a couple years away.
Well, the thing about Adam Lowry, isn't it, and I touched on it in the article, is you don't want to have Adam Lowry and Mark Scheifele as two-thirds of your top three centers. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about Adam Lowry. I've never seen him play, so first of all, I have to qualify any statement by saying that. But, I mean, you want to go up in this division, in the Central Division, with two centers under 22, 23 years old? I don't think so. You're not going to succeed in the league, as far as I'm concerned, with that, unless you're doing Crosby Malkin kind of thing. In time, they'll be all right. But, I mean, that's an awfully young center corp to go into the season with and then expect to make the playoffs, which this team always talks about. So Ezzie doesn't think Jokinen, strictly based on his play and the need of a third-line center, ought to be back. David, do you disagree with that, or do you agree with that?
Well, I disagree with it in one sense. I'm not sure that the Jets have an alternative right now. I mean, we don't know what's happening with Burmistrov, who you could very easily say would slot in in that spot if the Jets chose to bring him back. So but that's not intangible because we don't know whether he is or isn't coming back. So we have to kind of assume that he isn't as of right now because he's not a member of the Jets.
Right.
And then the issue is, do you have someone in the farm team that you could bring up and replace Ole Jokinen? I mean, with all due respect to Eric O'Dell, who I thought played all right this, you know, when he was asked to.
Yeah.
Is he a third-line center in the NHL? I'm not sure. Maybe over the course of a full season he might be. He's very good in the AHL. So, I mean, maybe he just, if given the opportunity in the right
light. Big difference.
That's right. There is a huge jump. So, my concern is the Jets don't have the depth to replace him right now. So then it becomes a function of money, which obviously we're going to get into the next segment. But, like, I think if it was, assuming that we can talk about that, the right price, I think you bring him back because I just don't see that you have anybody else to replace him with.
So and you lean more towards yes, as he leans more towards no. So which is interesting.
I mean, he's gotten slower. There's no question. But his fitness level, his commitment, and he's very committed to being in shape. I mean, he really is. I mean, look, he talked about it. He's like one of the only guys in the NHL who has a his own personal trainer, not someone that the team pays, and it's not someone that he has on like that he uses once a week. This is a guy literally that is he's hired by Ole Jokinen. He works for Ole Jokinen solely to keep Ole Jokinen in. You know, tip-top shape.
And I give him credit for that. I think one of the things with Ole Jokinen is that he says one thing and plays a different way. Like, he always says the right thing. You're in there.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the rooms. You guys are both in the rooms all the time. And Ole Jokinen always has the right answer. But I don't see the play on the ice always matching the answer.
He's without question, probably the most thoughtful interview you can have with the Jets. I mean, he gives you a measured response every time. He thinks about what he says before he says it. There's generally a reporter will ask him a question and there's always a pause. That's not because he's trying to think of something, like he's just genuinely reflecting on the question before he answers it. And the question is, I mean, the reality is, Richard, he's getting older. And I think his body is, regardless of whether he's attempting to stay in tip-top shape, it is, you know, is it...
I see it more, though, as decision-making on the ice than the lack of speed. I realize, you know, you're going to go older, you're going to slow down a bit. I just think decision-making on the ice, which ought to be better than it was when he was younger, is not there.
You know what? Yeah, and that's, I guess that's obviously, that's a factor as to whether you bring him back as a third line center because...
And are you playing a third line center in a checking role or are you playing a third line center in a scoring role and can he defend well enough?
Or would it be a mix, obviously, which is what Ezzie's saying.
And
is
can
that
he win draws?
And to me, the answer to all of those is no, he can't.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Ole Jokinen has never been a physical... I mean, guys, this is a high first-round pick back in the 90s who has been a top offensive player for the Florida Panthers, even with the Calgary Flames, even though he wasn't putting up quite the numbers.
On bad teams, and Mike Keenan was riding him to the ground.
Right, and a few years ago, he still put up 60 points, but the 43 points, a lot of those were on the second line earlier in the season. Ole Jokinen was getting a lot of power play time. Yeah. I think they need a third-line player that offers more intangibles than just offense.
Well, I think what it ultimately comes down to is what you have versus what you need. I mean, obviously they need someone who could fit that role better than Ole Jokinen, but at the same time, unless you have that, you know, it's like I mean, I'm not going to get into the Andre Pavlik situation, but it's like Pavlik, right? Everybody wants a new goalie. Do you have that goalie? If you have that goalie, then that's something you can talk about. If you have that third line center who is going to replace Ole Jokinen and you know, he's either comparable money or less, then obviously you're going to do it.
One thing also, I would much rather see the Jets go out and acquire a third line center via free agency, sign him to a 3-year, 4-year deal, than have Olli Jokinen as a 1-year stopgap again.
Would you want a guy like, we're talking about money next segment, but would you want a guy like Steve Ott play the center role, or is that too high for him? I know he's playing first line.
I would rather see a guy like Steve Ott. You mentioned Matt Cullen, who's under contract. Yes. Another guy that I brought up that could command upwards of $5 million is Dave Boland. I'm a big fan of Dave Boland.
Apparently he was asking for like 8 years, $40 million from Toronto, and I like Dave Boland. I do like his game.
Maybe not at that money.
No, I don't like it. See you later at that money. When we come back, we're going to break down the money aspect of Jokinen. What will he be asking for, do we think? And should the Jets be looking to sign him at that money? We're also going to get to your tweets. What do you think about Olli Jokinen? You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're discussing Olli Jokinen. He's a pending, unrestricted free agent for the Winnipeg Jets. That means any team can sign him. All they got to give him is money, and a fair amount of it. Richard Pollock, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and Ezra Ginsberg. Before we get into the financial aspect of this and what we think his market value is and whether we think the Jets should give him that, and you've already heard Ezzy and I say that we think the Jets should look elsewhere. David disagreed on that point. What does the Twitter world have to say, David?
There's a number of tweets. We got Barry Saunders. I don't think it's the football Barry Saunders, but he says...
Saunders, not a Sanders.
That's a good point. Says UFA's David Legwand or David Bolin. Ivan Telligan, also another name thrown out, former or current Jet, playing in the KHL.
Not to burst his bubble, I don't think Telligan's coming back.
And Legwand and Bolin are going to cost upwards of $4.5 million just off the top of my head. Four for sure.
Telligan, I don't think is an NHL player at this point in his career either.
Thomas Hartlieb tweeted at us saying, Coach Reese has a specific game he wants players to play. Jokinen does not fit that mold, especially not for the money he will ask. And then you got Rick Romanek saying, indifferent. He's not a difference maker either way. And Diane says, yes, what a work ethic. Some of the kids on the team could take a page from his book. So we've got a variety of tweets from fans saying they would bring him back or they wouldn't bring him back.
Don't agree with the work ethic. I've had issues. She's entitled to her opinion, I think. Olli Jokinen is, let's just say that he's not the most intense player. And I think that it's one thing for him to be in good shape and have the personal therapist and all that. But, I mean, this is a guy that's gone through big stretches of seasons with no points. And you can look this up. I mean, he's been streaky with the Jets. And towards the end of the season, I forget what it was. Maybe Remus can look it up. He went 10 or 11 games without a point. So the work ethic thing, I don't agree with. To me, Olli Jokinen has done a nice job this year, but I still don't think he's a player to me that I say the Jets. Like for me, Mark Stewart was a guy that I thought, yes, Chevy's got to re-sign Mark Stewart. Mark Stewart is a third pairing defenseman who has played first and second pairing on this team, and he will block a shot and he busts his butt every single game. He'll drop the gloves. He'll make the big hit. He'll do whatever he takes. He's a big part of this team going forward. To me, Olli Jokinen, despite his age, he's got 2 or 3 years left of good hockey. But to me, does Olli Jokinen bust his butt like Mark Stewart does? To me, it's not even close.
Money-wise, you look at Olli Jokinen's last contracts, 2 years, $4.5 million from the Jets. I don't think he's going to get anywhere near that in his next deal. But then you look at the market. It's interesting because you look at a couple of guys. I look at Daniel Briere as a good comparable when you're looking at the market. And Daniel Briere is 36 years old. He just signed a 2-year, $8 million deal with the Montreal Canadiens. He put up 25 points. And then you're seeing his terrific playoff success, which he's always had. He's been a clutch player for many years. 25 points in 69 games. 0.36 points per game. Jokinen was 0.52 this year. Both aren't great at faceoffs. And Briere played about 5 minutes less a game, 4.5 minutes less a game.
It's a healthy scratch a bunch of times this year, too.
Yeah, and I think, and you look at Derek Roy. Derek Roy's 30 years old, but Derek Roy put up 37 points this year. Again, 0.49 points per game. Bad on faceoffs. Played less than Jokinen. Derek Roy's only 30 years old, but you know he got a 1-year deal at $4 million, and Briere got a 2-year deal at $4 million. I don't see I see the NHL veering away from giving veterans two-year deals. They'd rather get a one-year deal, have him perform really well, and give him more money next year if that's possible. I don't see a team giving Jokinen 2 years. But a comparable, I think, is pretty valid in this case is Matt Cullen. Now, I think there's a difference in style, but production-wise and stats-wise, there isn't much of a difference. Matt Cullen was 36 years old last year when he signed a two-year deal with Nashville. 39 points in 76 games. So he had basically identical points per game to Jokinen. Better on faceoffs, though, considerably better. 10% better than Jokinen, and played a little bit less. So, you know, Cullen's a guy who can play some power play, play the point, is more aware defensively, I think. You know what you're getting is won a cup. Jokinen, you know, as our friend Mike just pointed out in a text to me, has played, I think, six postseason games in his whole career. I believe it was like the Chicago-Calgary series. It was his only postseason action he's ever played, which is crazy, guys. I mean, that is, and I think that's a sign that there's something there. I mean, if he's a guy who's a fourth liner and he never plays in the playoffs, it's different. But if he's a guy you're paying $5-6 million to and you're never making the playoffs with him, I think something's up. So looking at that and looking at Cullen signed a two-year $3.5 million deal in the offseason. So that's 2 years, $7 million. Jokinen is going to look for probably around there for a contract. But I don't think he gets the 2 years because of what's happened with guys like Breer, Roy, and even Cullen. You know, do you need to sign him to the two-year deal? I think he gets a one-year deal. And I think it's somewhere around the $3.5 to $4 million. So I think 3.75 is a fair number. I think based on comparables, that is a fair contract ask. I think Ian Purvis, his agent, will ask for more. Ian Pulver of the Will Sports Group will ask for more. Of course, he's an agent. And Jokinen took the most money, I believe, was available to him last negotiation. But if he asks for 3.75 on a one-year deal, Ezzy, taking that into account, I know you wouldn't bring him back money aside, but if you're factoring in money in the market and all that, is that something you would consider if you have no other options in free agency? Like, would you trade for a replacement, or would you say, I'll just take Jokinen for another year, Burmistrov's not coming back, and we'll see what happens next year?
Well, I think I answered that last segment, and I think there are better options. So the answer to that would be no again. And I think, you know, with all due respect to Ole Jokinen and Ian Pulver, I have no knowledge of how many teams or what the other options were for Ole Jokinen. But my personal belief is there weren't a lot of teams that were knocking at the door for Ole Jokinen 2 summers ago.
Yeah.
And so what has changed now, 2 years later? And again, this is not a knock on Ole Jokinen personally, because I think he likes Winnipeg and he stayed here during the lockout. But we're talking about a Jets team, guys, that needs to take the next step into the playoffs. And this is a huge hole to fill. If the Jets are able to find a player to play that third-line center role, this team is very set and strong up the middle.
Let me ask you about that. I'm going to get in there. You talk about Little, you talk about Shifley, and even whoever it is. I just want to talk top two centers. Paul Maurice had some interesting comments about Mark Shifley, you know, saying he's not going to be your Sidney Crosby type. It was earlier in the season. He didn't say, he basically said there's a ceiling on his offensive ability, but it's not a low ceiling, but there's like a little bit of a ceiling. So I thought it was interesting because he's generally a positive spin doctor, right? Are Shifley and Little, I mean, you can't look at it in vacuum because wingers, defensemen, goaltenders, but are Shifley and Little as a number 1-2 good enough in this division to take this team to the next level?
Well, I think
it's early to ask that because of Shifley's development, but right. I think it needs to be taken into account, no?
I think this can be a playoff team with certain players coming in. I don't think that a third-line center, let's say a Steve Ott or a Dave Boland, is going to make this team a Western Conference threat, mm-hmm. but I think it can get them into the playoffs. And I think that's what this team is trying to do. You don't make the jump from a team who is just below the playoff line to a Stanley Cup contender. It just doesn't happen like that. The Chicago that's Blackhawks right. had to struggle for many years before they got to this point. The Columbus Blue Jackets are just at that point right now. So I think, yes, they can be
but a the team Blackhawks, that makes... Ezzy, the Blackhawks, I'm going to get into the Blackhawks struggled to a point where they had top three picks.
That's true.
And the Jets have not struggled to a point where they have
you're
top
right.
picks.
It isn't apples and apples. It was different situations. But I think that this team right now, the goal is to get into the playoffs and get better and better and wait for these other players, whether it's the Adam Lowrys or the guys sure. that are further
Nick
behind
Patan.
The yep. Nick Patans and the Josh yeah. Morrissey's 2-3 years from now that can make this team even better. So I think that, yes, this team can be a playoff team with the centers that they have. Jim Slater's got to be healthy, because I think when Jim Slater yep. is healthy, he's an excellent fourth-line center. You know, you guys know Dave's a big fan of his as well. Great in the community, Jim Slater, but he's got
to
be healthy.
You need to help Jim Slater, too.
You got
to
help
get him a fourth-line left winger.
Yes.
Tangredi, no right. You got to get him a fourth line left winger. You got to get a guy like Glass in there if you want to play somebody like, something like that, a forechecking guy. And you got to improve your fourth line right, your third line left wing and your third line center. And what are you going to do? Even like, is Frolik ideally is your third line right winger? That's ideally what he is. Depending on how you want to play your top nine, that's ideally what he is. Wheeler's your number one right winger. Is Bufflin your number two right winger? There's a lot of decisions to be made here. But I want to get back to Jokinen for a second, Dave. $3.75 million a year. You said you'd probably lean towards bringing him back. Is that a contract that you think that was reasonable for the Jets to sign him to?
Well, you know what? Again, like I said, it's just looking at it as just straight, would I pay him $3.75 million without Burmistrov, without someone else that you're going to, without a free agent that's coming to Winnipeg and saying, I want to play, fill that role as your third line center, then I think you bring back Jokinen for that. Because you crunch the numbers. The numbers are what they are. That's the market value for a player of Ole Jokinen's age and production. So if that's what the market value dictates, then that's what it is. And the truth is this. Ole Jokinen could choose to stay here for that kind of money, or potentially if there's a team that says, you know what, he's good, he hasn't managed to get a team into a playoffs, but we could use him on a third line and maybe facilitate his play by giving him more productive wingers, then potentially you could have a team that'll go out and pay him more money. But if, as you look, Richard, the reality is this. I know that you've done it, your homework, and you've crunched it. So if that's what a market would pay him, then I would give it to him for 1 year simply because I just don't see anybody else filling that role. Again, if Chevy goes out and bring someone in, that's a different story. And then he's obviously not going to do that.
The 3.75, and if I'm not, I think that's what market dictates he probably should get. I don't know if he will get it. That's an interesting question. And the other thing is this, though. You can't, and as he's bringing up good points, different issues. $3.75 million. I know you got to fill the third line. You got to fill the third line center need regardless. So you have to fill it. But what about spending less on that spot? And I realize, you know, what are you going to get for that? But less on that spot, and then taking that money and spending it elsewhere.
I think that's the whole issue, and that's why it goes back to what we're going to talk about for the next 2 months into free agency, and that's bringing in a top pairing or at the very least second pairing left shooting defenseman. That's the big void on this team.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I agree. I think you spend less money, and I realize that the economics of sport are completely irrational and completely out of whack based on what doctors and professors and teachers and lawyers make. But when I think of $3.75 million for Ole Jokinen again, and I say, is that going to make the team better, or are we going to have the same result as we did this past year? And I think my answer would be the latter. I think we have another situation where if someone isn't brought in via free agency to fill these roles, we're going to have the same result where the Jets are going to be 5 or 6 points out of a playoff spot.
I think that's well said, Ezzy. And it'd be interesting to see what happens with Ole Jokinen and a bunch of the other decisions that Kevin Cheveldayoff, who we're going to talk about in this next hour, does with the Winnipeg Jets. When we come back, that's 2 hours down, one to go. Barry Trotz was let go this week from his position as head coach of the Nashville Predators. Well, there's no better person to break that down with than Josh Cooper of the Tennessean, and he's next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
a.m. Saturday, April 19th, 2014. You're listening to the last hour of The Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290. Richard Pollock, David Manoop, and Ezra Ginsberg, Timmy Debenhab, and Michael Remus. Got everybody here today. We're having a great time on this Saturday morning. This segment's brought to you by CompuStitch Embroidery and Design. The official sponsor of the IC game-winning goal and IC 50-50 contest has been serving Winnipeg and surrounding areas for over 15 years. No matter the size of the job, small or large, CompuStitch Embroidery Design provides the expert attention to customers' needs. CompuStitch Embroidery Design, keeping you in stitches since 1996. For more information, visit CompuStitch.net. David?
ICOT pool. Don't forget about that. We now run the ICOT pool. We've had 3 overtimes so far in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So every time a game goes to overtime, hashtag ICOT pool and win IC gear.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Got Josh Cooper of the Tennessean on the line, but I've been told reliably by Michael Remus that Josh Cooper was at a Springsteen show this week and it was too long.
I kind of had a bit of a GI bug a few days beforehand, and it was just
really, really hard to stand for 3.5 hours.
I'm jealous. You know, he hasn't announced the rest of the tour, Josh, after the middle of May, and I'm unsure of whether he's coming to Winnipeg. There are rumors that he is, but you get to see him. How was he? I need a full report before we get to Barry Trotz.
He was amazing. I mean, it really was. Like, at first, I was honestly, when I got there, I was a little disappointed to see little Steven wasn't there and mm-hmm. Tom Morello was in his place, but my God, that guy can wail on guitar. I mean, Bruce is like, it's like listening to gospel music for 3.5 hours. He has like a ridiculously huge band, and it's just a party. I mean, he, like, kind of the fast number he closed with was a Shout, and it was just like everyone in the crowd was just going crazy. And then the whole band left, and he did an acoustic solo version of Thunder Road, and it was just awesome. I mean, like, but it is kind of funny how, like, this is my 9th Springsteen show. When he does Born to Run, you're just like, can you play something else? I've heard this at every show, you know?
He's got to play for people who haven't been there 9 times, but I'm with you on that. Because, I mean, you want to hear some of the other ones. And
he played Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones. It was crazy.
I read about that. How was that performance?
It was great. It was unbelievable. He brought a little girl up on stage, and she sang with him. I mean, like, it was... He must have brought like 20 kids on stage. I mean, he was like a father up there. He was like, you know, high-fiving the kids, like putting like, you know, gear on them. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, he's such an interactive performer. I only wish I could see him in a smaller venue, just because I really feel like that could add just a lot of intimacy and would just make the show a lot better.
That would be incredible. There's no word yet, Josh, if Bruce Springsteen is a candidate to replace Barry Trotz in Nashville for the head coaching job. But if we can get to the actual news with Barry Trotz, the team and Barry parted ways last week. We'll get into the details of that in a second. But why did that happen?
Well, you know, it's interesting. David Poile said that the seeds for this began to kind of germinate, if you will, after the Phoenix series in 2012, when they lost in 5 games to a team that a lot of us thought they should have beaten handily. Mm-hmm. And, I think that's kind of where it all began, was just losing to Phoenix. But it was weird, because when you think about the Preds, David Poile can move very quickly on some ends and can move very methodically on others. And he obviously moved very methodically on this. I think this is only the third time in his career he's fired a coach. But I think that what he wanted was a new voice, somebody with more of an offensive mind. But on top of that, too, when you see this around the league, I mean, if you're the guy who's making the change, you tend to not be changed. But if you're the guy who's, you know, not making the change, you end up being changed. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, Barry Trotz is, obviously, he's a proud son of Manitoba. A lot of us know him as a coach who's done more with less, and I think that that's a very fair assessment of him. I don't think that he's been given a lot of support in terms of players from management. In the past, I think the Preds were able to identify talent very well. I don't think they've done a very good job of that the last few years. But he ended up just being the fall guy. That's just kind of how it worked out. Sad for Barry Trotz, unfortunate, but, that's just the way it happened.
Josh, I imagine you were asking yourself this question, and that's why I have to ask the question. As far as Barry Trotz goes, was this a mutual decision between general manager David Poile and Barry Trotz, or was Barry Trotz fired?
I think it's a bit of a 60-40. You know, I think that because Barry Trotz, I think, is on a one-year contract every year. The guy's never even had an agent, as far as I know. Maybe he had an agent when he first got hired here, but mm-hmm. hasn't had an agent for many years. As far as my understanding goes, or maybe he's never had one, I don't know. But either way, I think that when you sort of look at it, I think Barry would have been, I think he's comfortable with this. I really think he is. I mean, he's been talking about how comfortable he is with it. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, he's going to be able to probably get a better job and make a lot more money. And that's going to be pretty good for him. I think the common theme was he's not going to be out of work that long. And, you know, I mean, this is a good market. I think Barry has prided himself on building this market from scratch. I mean, because really, even though David Poyle was the first guy hired here and he's a general manager or whatnot, Barry Trotz is the Nashville Predators. I mean, when you look at that logo, when you think of the personality of this team, you don't think David Poyle. David Poyle is kind of like, you know, the wizard from The Wizard of Oz, you know, sort of behind the cloak making the move. Barry Trotz is the Nashville Predators. He is the personality of this team. And, you know, but at the same time, I think that after a while, you know, you can get a little tired of just sort of dealing with the financial constraints, dealing with some of the management issues that they have here, to a point where, you know, maybe it is time. So, you know, I think Barry would have come back if he was offered a contract around the time that David does that, which I think is around the new year or so. But, you know, I think that he's perfectly happy with how things are going, and I think that he's fine with the direction his life is moving in.
Josh, the it's been a long tenure for Barry Trotz, but if you had to give his entire reign a grade, what would you do?
A grade for his entire reign?
Yeah.
You know, I would give it probably a B+ or maybe a B. I think he's a great coach. I think he's done a lot of tremendous things here. I think he's taken sort of the bare parts management has given him and turned them into playoff teams, and for that, he really deserves a tremendous grade. But when you look over the tenure of his time here, he never made it out of the second round of the playoffs. That's not very, you know, that's pretty rough. Now, granted, I think part of that is management as well. You look at David Poyle's entire career, 30 years as a general manager, made it to the conference finals only once. But, you know, I think that that's the one mark, and that's why I can't give Barry an A, just because he never made it out of the second round. But I think he's done so much here, and maybe if you even add the personal element into it, just how hard he worked to try to grow hockey in Nashville. I mean, that's one of the things that people don't understand about Barry Trotz, is just how hard he worked. I mean, I think one of the things he said in his goodbye press conference was, you know, hockey in Nashville is kind of cool. And, you know, I think that's how that's a tribute to him. He never turned down an interview, never turned down an appearance, was very big in the charity community here, and just overall in general was just a real, I guess, the Jewish term mensch in a lot of ways in Nashville. So figured you guys would get that.
I like that. There's maybe two mensches in here, but not
but he
three.
He really was. He was a hockey mensch. I mean, there's no question about that.
And he had a great tenure in Nashville. We're joined by Josh Cooper of the Tennessean to talk about the change in coach and the coaching staff in Nashville, and we're going to talk about the assistants in a little bit here in terms of maybe the prospects for who will replace Barry Trotz. When I look at this team, though, Josh, I see a little bit of Buffalo, that, you know, Regier and Ruff, how they were tied at the hip, and then Ruff is replaced. Obviously, Rolston doesn't succeed. Regier is eventually pushed out. Is David Poyle on solid ground, or are we talking about a similar situation to Buffalo?
I think he's on solid ground. I mean, you're looking at a guy, I mean, for lack of a better term, he basically gave an eye for this franchise. I mean, he can't see out of his right eye right now because of him going on a road trip and getting hit in the face with a puck. So, you know, I mean, I think he's on solid ground in Nashville right now. But, you know, I think that some of the sheen has worn off, and Shea Weber really put it best at breakout day. He said, "We're no longer an expansion franchise. We shouldn't be acting like one." And, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you still have this feel that this is an expansion franchise in a lot of ways, just with how they operate, the type of stuff that they do. And, you know, I think some of that does come from David Poyle, just since he has been here since day one. I mean, you have to kind of look at watershed moments for expansion franchises when finally, they sort of broke the mold. I mean, for the LA Kings, it took many, many years, and then they got Wayne Gretzky, and all of a sudden, it became cool to be an LA King.
Right.
For the Anaheim Ducks, it took a lot of years. Then all of a sudden, Scott Niedermeyer says, "I want to play with Rob." And suddenly, they're not really an expansion-type team anymore. I mean, they had good teams in the past, but that became a destination. I mean, there's just, you know, you need sort of that Hyde Piper type situation where a guy is going to come here and want to come here. And the Preds thought they had it with Paul Kariya, then the ownership situation blew up in their face. So, but to answer your question about David Poyle, I mean, I think he needs to get people to come here. I think he has to do a better job of selling Nashville because, you know, you're not going to fill the seats. And as much as I like people like Eric Nystrom and, you know, Matt Hendricks was a good guy, Matt Cullen's a good guy, you know, you're not going to fill the seats by signing players who are basically grit players.
Right.
And I think that, you know, he needs to probably do a better job of getting more skill guys in the lineup. He just hasn't really done that.
Josh, when you look at Barry Trotz's future now that he's been let go by the Nashville Predators, there could be a coaching vacancy in Vancouver. There could be a coaching vacancy in Toronto, and his name has been linked to maybe being a candidate for the Leafs and Canucks coaching jobs. How do you think Trotz would fare in a big Canadian market?
I don't think he wants to be in Canada, and I don't think it's a knock against Canada in any way. I just feel like this is the type of environment he's used to. He has a son with Down syndrome. He has his family is very important to him, as is their overall privacy and just, you know, how they're treated within the market and within, I guess, with the media. I just don't see Canada as a fit for him. You know, I just feel like he's comfortable in the United States. That's not to say I think he's going to want to coach with the Florida Panthers, where, you know, very few people care about the team. The one city I could see is Vancouver, just because of the gobs of money they have. And, you know, for lack of a better term, because the weather there isn't as cold as it is in most of Canada. I think Barry has gotten comfortable to living in, you know, spending his winters in Nashville, where generally it's very mild, and then going to Kelowna in the summer, where it's also very mild. That's the one place I can see, and I know that that may sound really weird, but, you know, I feel like he just got very comfortable with the lifestyle here, and I could just sort of see that. It's tough to see him living in a place like Toronto, you know, if that becomes a vacancy. I just think Vancouver, I know Barry loves Vancouver just because I've been there with him and kind of walked around with him a little bit. I mean, that's definitely a spot I think he enjoys, but that's really the only Canadian market I can see him in. You know, unless Brendan Shanahan does a hell of a sell job on him.
Josh, do you think Trotz was a defensive coach no matter what, or coached a style in accordance with his team's offensive talent level?
I think he coached based on the talent level. And you look at those teams with, like, Paul Kariya, and when J.P. Dumont was in his prime, when Steve Sullivan was in his prime, when he had Peter Forsberg for a bunch of games. That team, I think the 06-07 team, ranked fifth in the NHL in offense. I mean, that was a good offensive team. I think Barry's system is a puck pressuring system, and it's a move your feet type system. It's trying to get guys to sort of pressure you into mistakes and then capitalizing on mistakes. He doesn't really hold back. His system doesn't sit back, and I think that's a major misconception. Is he an offensive mind like a Guy Boucher or Peter Laviolette, you know, two guys whose names have been sort of brought into the mix here in Nashville as potential replacements? I don't think so, but I think Barry can coach offense. And sort of, I've been talking to some people, and Barry was so well liked here. I mean, I've been talking to former staff members here, you know, who knew him very well. And our kind of joke is, okay, let's say Pittsburgh flames out in the first round, Bylsma ends up getting fired, Barry becomes the head coach of the Penguins, and they have the number one offense in the NHL. That would be the biggest troll to Nashville, like, ever, probably. And we would probably all find it to be hilarious. But I think he can coach talent. I think he can coach offense. And that's a great misconception on him, just because I think he can be a really good offensive coach.
Joined by Josh Cooper of the Tennessean, talking about Nashville, Barry Trotz being dismissed from his position as head coach and who the possible replacements are. And that leads us to the next question, Josh. As he's going to ask you about some other candidates, but you wrote in the Tennessean about some of the candidates for this position. It looks like Peter Laviolette may be the favorite. Is that fair to say at this point?
I think it's fair to say. I look at Peter Laviolette, offensive mind. You can immediately sell to your fan base, this guy's won a Stanley Cup. He's been to a final. Somebody pointed out to me, yeah, but he's been fired twice, to which my response to that is, well, who in the NHL hasn't been fired? So, Paul Maurice is the coach at Winnipeg. How many times has he been fired?
Yeah.
And he's a really good coach. I mean, I know Stu Brimson speaks absolute incredible volumes about Paul Maurice. I think Laviolette would make the most sense. USA Hockey, he's the world championships coach. and Phil Housley, who's a Preds assistant coach, is going there, as is the Preds video coach. Now, you know, the journalist in me is thinking there's got to be something to that. I've been told those wheels were set in motion a long time ago, but, you know, with the amount of sway David Poile has in USA Hockey, I wouldn't be shocked if he was like, oh, you know, if you need to send, you know, my video coach and my assistant over there. I mean, I think Phil Housley is probably going to go anyway, but it just, it does have the feeling of a trial run in some ways. So, but yeah, I think Laviolette is sort of the guy. I mean, John Stevens is another name I've heard. Looks like Housley and Lane Lambert are not going to be considered for the head coaching job. They're currently Fred's assistant coaches. But yeah, I'd say at the moment, Laviolette's the guy. Of course, unless, you know, I think another situation could be Pittsburgh gets bounced in the first round. Dan Byles will become a possibility as another offensive coach with a Stanley Cup to his resume. So, you know, there's, I think we're sort of going to sort of have to wait to see which team moves out in the playoffs and when and who ends up becoming available.
Josh, you know, you basically, you know, answered the question because I was going to ask you about some of the other coaching candidates and you touched on Phil Housley and John Stevens. So I guess the question has to be, how are the wedding preparations going?
You guys are too funny. They're fine. We're in the home stretch. We're 98 days now. So hope to see you all there.
Well, as he's getting in shape, and unfortunately the Nashville Predators' high hopes ran into the wall, and it's another lost season, but it'll be interesting to see who they hire, Josh, and we always appreciate your you giving your time to us and hope to catch up with you real soon.
High hopes ran into the wall. I like that, Springsteen. That was good. Thank you.
At least you picked up on it. Josh Cooper of the Tennessean, thanks for joining us. As always, when we come back, Kevin Cheveldayoff's end-of-season presser and the NHL lottery results. Jets are picking ninth again. We're going to talk about both of those things when we're back after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Illegal Curve Hockey Show, TSN 1290, Saturday morning, April 19th, 20 after 11. Ezra Ginsburg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, Timmy Debenham and Michael Remus join me in studio. We're going to talk about Kevin Cheveldayoff's end of season presser, guys, because he always has a lot to say. He always says a lot, but doesn't say much. So I guess he has a lot to say, but we could technically break that down. There's a couple of quotes I thought were somewhat interesting, and I want to kind of break those down as opposed to talking about, you know, kind of the whole presser. The first quote I thought was interesting was this one about Andre Pavlik.
Yes, Andre Pavlik is the number one goaltender going into next season.
And, I mean, we talked about a little bit on NHL Midweek, which is now on in the off season, and we'll be back. What do you guys make of Pavlik being pronounced number one netminder this early in the offseason?
We talked about this Wednesday at the Free Press Cafe, and I said this at the time. I don't think it means anything. And I'm not saying that Chevy wasn't going to or isn't in support of his goaltender. I just mean, what else are you going to say? I mean, Andre Pavlik going into next season is the only goalie that's under contract. So what else are you going to say? I mean, of course he's going to say he's the number one goalie. I personally believe that if Andre Pavlik doesn't take the bull by its horns and really play a lot better than he's played and perform more consistently for this team, that they're going to have to look elsewhere because his performance this year just wasn't good enough for him to get the starts that he's been getting over the last couple of years. So, of course, Chevy's going to give him the support, but I think that in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't mean much.
I think that part of the problem was that people got upset about the comment, and the reality is this, as he just said, and he's 100% right, what else is he going to say? He has to say that. He's the only guy you've got right now. You really don't have an alternative. So, as of right now, he is your number one goaltender, and that's all there is to say about it. I mean, could that change this summer? Absolutely it could change this summer. But, I mean, the fact is that you have to give your goaltender that sort of vote of confidence right now because, look, maybe you want to use him as trade bait, but you're certainly not going to get anybody to snag on him as a trade option if you're saying, well, you know, he's not really our number one starter. Well, how are you going to trade him then? Who's going to take him then? Who's going to take him with that contract anyways? Good question. But the fact is that, you know, that's just part of the game. And fans get upset and they just have to realize that the GM is just playing his role in that game.
Cheveldayoff came on board with a fairly long contract. I think 5 years was he originally signed and he extended for 2 more years. So he's basically on a 7-year deal. He had comments about where the team sits in that 3 to 5 year rebuild that was spoken about at the outset of his tenure.
Well, you know, again, I don't know if you can really place the term on
rebuilding or retooling. You know, there's lots of different terms that are out there, and you know, again, there's no time frame on development of a young player, and there's no magic solution to say in X years we will be at this point, because if anyone can predict the future, you know, they're a better person that, you know, than I am. So as far as the 3-year plan or the 5-year plan, like, you don't sit there and say in 3 years we will be at X, or in 5 years we will be at X, because you can't think in those terms. You have to think in how can we grow, how can we build. And sometimes it takes it takes longer than that. Sometimes things happen quicker that you say, you know what, never expected this guy to get to the National Hockey League as quickly as he did, but it's a pleasant surprise, and here we go. We've got this in place. Where does that take us now? Or, you know what, never expected a guy to be out for half a season here. Things might have to slow down with our projection in him, because that's just the way it is. And
far easier for him to say that with basically a 7-year deal than most other general managers who are in a little bit more, you know, shaky ground, I think, right? Like, would you guys agree with that? You know, you can say the 3 to 5 years. I mean, 5 years is going to be a pretty good idea of whether or not he's done the job here, in my opinion.
Right, and knowing that you have 4 years left on your deal obviously gives you a certain level of comfort and security. And I know that Chevy isn't going to put projections and says that that's not really how it works, but the reality is this team wants to get into the playoffs in the next couple of years here. That has to be the next step for this team, because if you're not getting into the playoffs a year from now and 2 years from now, then what are you doing? You're a middling team now for too long, and you're missing that gap to get the higher draft picks.
That's right.
To really take your team, as we've seen with Colorado, they went from a last place team to a team that won the division. So you're in a situation right now where this is a big offseason. The core is locked up. That happened for the last 2 years. Now it's a question of bringing in personnel to make this team better and taking them to the next step. So I appreciate everything saying, and I think the Jets have done a great job of drafting here, but the bottom line is this team needs to get into the playoffs next year, or I don't see how. Maybe you guys disagree, but I don't see how the next year can be a success if they don't get into the playoffs.
I just wonder if they can get into the playoffs. I mean, I look at the teams that they're competing with, and I don't think they're better than any of them right now, unless there's
a
drastic
change.
Well,
that's why we're talking about having to bring in players via free agency or trade.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you have to do. You know, going back to last segment, you're going to re-sign Olli Jokinen. You're going to bring that's what you're going to do. I mean, your team's not going to be any different.
That's right. And then you can't expect a different result if your team isn't any different. One guy that Kevin Cheveldayoff wants to bring back and has talked about, you know, re-signing him, he's a restricted free agent, so he can't be signed by another team unless it's an offer sheet, which the Jets have the right to match within 7 days. And that's Michael Frolik.
We have a restricted free agent in Michael Frolik that, certainly that's someone that, we feel has grown into a big part of this organization, and we'll certainly, look at, reaching out to his representatives at appropriate point in time.
I think the appropriate point in time is probably now. I mean, season's over, so I assume they've already talked, and we wouldn't know, and that's fine.
You know, as far as statistical data.
We're not supposed to be privy to that information. We're going to talk about the statistical data in a second here, but Frolik is a guy that I think everybody agrees needs to be signed, but you can't just pay him whatever he wants. I think he's a ceiling of he's a third line guy. You can play in your top six if you need him to, but you shouldn't be relying on him as a top six guy, in my opinion. I don't know what you guys think about that.
No, I think you're right, and I think on a team like the Winnipeg Jets that has that hole on right wing, and it's Blake Wheeler is your best right winger, but I think the reason why Michael Frolik was playing first line right wing is because you're spreading out your offense by putting Blake Wheeler on the second line. So I agree with you, Richie. He's a really good third line center, a guy that has the versatility to play in your top six, but going forward, he is a guy that will kill penalties, and he can provide you offense. He had a great year, and I think, as you mentioned, Richie, in your article, which was about 3 months ago, I believe, maybe we can link that right now. Remus or Dave can link that. I think you said 3 or 4 years is what you'd look to sign Frolik to. And I think Chevy and the Jets, I would have to believe, obviously I don't have any, I haven't talked to Chevy about this, but I'd have to think that they're looking to sign him for 3 or 4 years.
When you talk about, you know, breaking down Frolik and other players and the use of stats in terms of examining his roster, this is what Kevin Cheveldayoff had to say about that.
You know, as far as statistical data, you know, we could sit here and have debates, all day about different percentages or different goals against or, for goaltenders or plus minus or different statistical analysis for a lot of different players. You know, at the end of the day, everyone gets judged on the results. And, you know, if you take if we sat there and talked about, you know, broke it into 10 game segments, I'm sure there's some great segments there that Andre would have had. And you take some other 10 game segments and there's probably some ones that he'd like back. But I think you have to look at also what's going on with the team. And I go back to a little bit of my statement here earlier on here. There's a lot of things that happened to this team here. There was a point in time where everyone, we were left by the side of the road for dead. And there was a somewhat of a resurrection with this group.
Yeah, interesting comments. I think people may read, too much into that. Ed Tate has an interesting article about the stats in the Free Press this morning. Dave, you'll probably be linking that on illegalcurve.com, the morning papers. What do you make of those comments by Kevin Cheveldayoff, David?
You know what? It's funny. Chevy really is a tough guy because, as Paul Friesen likes to say a lot, he says a lot, and I mean, you said it too. He says a lot, and sometimes you're left scratching your head going, what exactly was that he said? And I mean, those comments are interesting, but they don't really tell you much. Like he says, he said, we can look at stats, you can break it up. And you know, look, the reality is this, and we know because we've been looking at numbers for a long time, you can make stats look a lot of different ways if you want to break them up in certain facts. So like when he says you can break it up in tag segments, that's great, but like what is that, is it really telling you anything that you didn't know already? No, not really. So I mean, I don't know. I didn't take much from that comment, to be honest.
And these guys aren't going to share any information with the media about analysis that they can. I mean, they're all so protective about it. Any of the analysis out there is always way behind the teams anyways.
Richie, can it be simplified to this as far as Andre Pavlik and the goaltending situation for the Winnipeg Jets goes? He's got to be better, and if he isn't better, they have to look at bringing in a better goaltender. Can it not be simplified to that?
I think it can absolutely be simplified to that, Ezzy. I completely agree with you. We're going to leave it there, guys. We didn't get time to talk about the lottery. The Jets are picking ninth. They've obviously had success taking Jacob Trouba, but ninth isn't third. And if you listen to Bob McKenzie talk, this is a top five. You know, he says the top five, he seems pretty firm about their talent level. It's the next group after them. We know it's not a deep draft in general, like in terms of top end talent. That speaks to it, I think. So you wonder what the Jets are going to do at nine, and we have a few months to break that down. When we come back, talking about draft eligible players, NCAA, CHL, Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey is going to be on. Talk to us about the growing number of Canadians who are going down to play NCAA hockey. And you saw a bunch of them in the recent Frozen Four and conference championships. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Timmy with little black keys there. Richard Pollock of Illegal Curve. Richard Pollock, David Manuk of illegalcurve.com. Well, Ezra Ginsberg.
You're of .com as well.
Yeah, I guess I am of .com as well.
I mean, you're the godfather of .com. So.
The godfather. Going on the mattresses here, I do. Timmy Debenham. Doing a great job. Michael Remus doing a great job as well. Before we get to Tom Lynn, this segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And we're joined on the line by Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey. Tom, it's been a while. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm jealous of the Bernstein's Deli, though. We only got one authentic Jewish deli left in the Twin Cities, and I miss all the other ones.
Well, you got to watch out. As he comes to town, he orders like 13 pounds of corned beef and loads up the trunk, and they stop him at the border. So, you know, we've been red flagged a bit there. Tom, we have you on today. Talk about, you know, kind of the increase in Canadians heading down to play in the NCAA, and looking at a piece that was on TSN.ca, 109 Canadians were in the NCAA conference tournaments this season. Is the number significantly on the rise?
You know, I don't know, because it's kind of like global warming. It depends on which swath of years you choose to look at. And looking at the college ranks, like when I wanted to come out in 86, I wanted to go to Cornell more than anything in the world. They had 24 Canadians and one American on the roster. And that can come and go. Same with Colgate and others. And then some schools go back and forth. And if the Gophers and BC make the tournaments, then they skew more American. So, you know, like I said, I haven't cut through the numbers to look at how it compares to the 80s, 90s, and recently. I would say that was Mike Schnee taking over College Hockey Inc., the marketing arm there. That in the last year, there's definitely been a higher profile for College Hockey in Canada. And there's good reasons for that, especially in the Manitoba area. Given what's happened with the WHL as far as number of Manitobans drafted and participating over the last 15 or 20 years, and then in the NHL, there's good reason for them to seek another avenue.
Yeah, Tom, we had Mike Snee on Hustler and Lawless, and Andy Murray was here, and he was a really nice guy and a good guest, and he has been doing a great job. I agree with you. As far as the growing trend of Canadians that are going to the U.S. and playing NCAA hockey, why is this?
I see a logical reason for it, but when I talk to people, everyone has their own personal story. And I'm focused a little bit on Manitoba right now, kind of with my thoughts, because I look for my own business at Minnesota, Manitoba, primarily. Mm-hmm. Some guys outside. But when you look at the NHL players produced by Manitoba in the 80s, it was roughly, I think when I looked at it, 35. When you look at 2010, I don't know what to call that decade, the aughts, the OOs, about 31, you know, that played regularly. So with the league expanding from 550 to about 750 NHL players, Manitoba's production of NHL players has definitely gone down. When you look at their numbers drafted in the WHL draft and participating, which I just looked at over this week, there's been a trend down as well, especially compared to BC, which is just blossoming. And so if I'm a Manitoba parent or hockey player who's 15, 16, 17 years old, you're seeing that, you know, what's another avenue? When our avenues are closed out, people look for a new one. And the fact that a late developer, either a small kid who grows late, right, or a big kid whose hockey acumen doesn't come until he's 18 or 19, like a Shara. Now, if you're very big or very small, the college group gets you an extra 4 years or so to develop, and so that could answer why people are looking for another avenue to get to the higher levels.
Tom, do you ever see a day when the Canadian universities try and copy the NCAA format?
I don't. You know, and there's so much talk about this in different sides of it. One is for the Canadian universities to copy the format. The other is that the NCAA might somehow legalize players coming from the CHL, which is essentially the same goal, right? Mm-hmm. But and a lot of people want that to happen. As a lawyer, I see that it won't, because as long as the NHL-CHL agreement provides for NHL-signed players to play in the CHL while receiving signing bonuses, there's no way they're not going to consider pros. But anyway, even if they got their stipend, you know, up and down the line, at the same time, the CHL is not going to give up that development agreement with the NHL, given the money coming down. And the Canadian universities, why would they turn off a spigot that's giving them, what, 85% of their players, 80% of their players? So it's nice to talk about, but the reality of the situation is no one's going to give up their primary source of players or income.
We're joined by Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Tom, when you look at the top-end talent, though, it still seems like the CHL is quite far ahead of the NCAA. Do you agree with that? And if so, why is that?
You know, I would have agreed with it until I saw the graphic that College Hockey Inc. put out last week, that five of the top 10 goal scorers in the NHL this year were college trained. I haven't parsed the numbers enough to say, you know, here's where it lies. My impression would be, and my impression is based on a lot of experience, and it changes over the years, that your top 10 pick types are now more likely to go to the CHL. You know, your Crosbys, your Ekblads, your guys like that who really want to come in and be 18-year-old NHL players. And that's what, like 8 to 12 guys every year have a chance to do that. After that, your players who are, you know, looking to make the NHL but realize they're going to make it as 19, 20, 21-year-olds, it's more evenly divided. So I think the CHL will continue to be what they call a quicker route to the NHL, whereas the NCAA gives you a different option. And I'll give you a good example. I think you guys watched the TSN, the championship game between the Gophers and Union.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a much higher-level play in that game, you know, that level than you'd find in the CHL. It's not across the board in college hockey, but you had 21 to 24-year-olds for the most part who had lifted for three extra years and trained and skated badly in that game. It's hard for an 18-year-old to step into that, you know, be a force. A lot of them play, but how many 18-year-olds are really a force in college hockey? And so if you're looking to play right away and be a top guy, you know, the CHL might be there, whereas for the college ranks, these guys often, if you're a Winnipegger who's 16 right now, you're looking at playing your 17 or 18-year-old year in the USHL or BCHL or Manitoba League and then coming down to the NCAA. So it's a different route.
Tom, as you're very well aware, in the NCAA, the amount of games that these teams play is significantly less. You'll see the University of North Dakota play Minnesota typically in weekend series. That's very common. There's about 35 regular season games as opposed to Canadian major junior hockey, where you have the amount of regular season games closer to an NHL regular season. Do you ever see a time where the NCAA adopts more regular season games?
Well, it's been on the discussion for a while. My feeling is vive la différence. It's free to say, because it really makes a stark contrast in the developed models of each. The ideal number of games, if I were to control the world, as it were, for development, would be somewhere in between. Colleges play too few, and the CHL plays a few too many. You get fatigue and other things affecting young players and overtraining. But what you have is a guy choosing the NCAA route knows that he's going to be able to lift and work out all week, right? Because he doesn't have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night games. He doesn't have 60 games to play. So whereas a CHL player who I have might lose a little bit of weight during the season, you know, have to hit at the end of the year to go hard, the NCAA guys who are maybe underweight or need to get stronger can do that. Conversely, if a guy is really physically mature at 17, 18 years old, and that's all taken care of, and he just needs more hockey, you know, CHL is a great route for you because then you get much more repetitions playing hockey there. So neither one is perfect, but I love that there's a big difference there. So players have a choice to make, as it were, what's best for their development.
Tom, how competitive are the CHL and NCAA in terms of pursuing young players? And when does this process begin?
Oh, it's super competitive. It's turned into something of spy novels now. The last 2 years have been brutal. Speaking as an advisor who works with 15, 16, 17-year-old players, I go back 3 years and I would say it was somewhat tame in that the WHL definitely had the advantage. And we're talking about Canadian players here, but mm-hmm. Okay, different thing for Americans. But for Canadian players, WHL would draft them at 15, take a shot at signing them or get them convinced. And then for anyone who's left over, who stayed in Tier 2 leagues, you know, the NCAA come along a year and a half, 2 years later and say, hey, who's left? Who wants to go to college? The NCAA didn't love that, I guess. The teams compete with each other, and the coaches want to keep their jobs. So if you're the North Dakota coach or Mankato or Colorado or Denver, you start sending your guy out a year early and then seeing the bantam. So you start poking around there, and then the WHL gets mad, and they start pushing harder. And next thing I know, you know, there's a ferocious eyeballing at rinks and bantam tournaments now. I don't know stuff like that. What parents are talking to who and what's going on. It doesn't serve everyone too well, but it's a ferocious competition right now.
Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey giving us interesting insight into the NCAA, CHL, and some Manitoba players, the less Manitoba players playing in the WHL or being drafted to the WHL. Tom, thanks very much for your time, and hope to see you soon.
No problem. Take care.
When we come back, rapid fire cheers and jeers, and then the Jays against the Indians at noon on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It's an interesting last segment choice of music there, Timmy. Last segment of Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 for this April 19th, 2014. Blue Jays baseball follows the show. Cleveland Indians and Jays, great game last night. Jays, Sergio Santos was able to get out of some trouble, bases loaded jam, and get the save after blowing it on Thursday. So Jays and Indians at 12 noon here on TSN 1290. And you heard the Habs game last night too. So lots of content on TSN 1290. Joined in studio by countless people.
We have an audience here. We've got Hart and Brendan. I mean, I love it. I want to hear that that laugh track now, because we've got. I guess it wouldn't be a laugh track because we could have actual audience members. Yeah, but it's I like having a little audience here.
I want to go to rapid fire before we go to cheers and jeers. This is interesting too. This is an interesting tune.
It's not the normal rapid fire. There we go.
Rapid fire.
Timmy just wanted to get a little extra of that music in there.
Well, I got to go to the rapid fire because I left these three questions for the end of the show because I thought there were three most perfect questions for Ezzy that you could possibly come up with. And the first question in rapid fire is Milan, if you watched last night's games, Milan Lucic on Danny DeKeyser and Corey Perry on Olympic teammate Jamie Benn both had some quote-unquote stick antics. Do you think that both of their stick work was grounds for suspension? We got Remus in here, too, because Remus wants it on this.
Yeah,
so let's go.
And Remus is going to get in here. But we should mention that the NHL announced just minutes ago that Milan Lucic will not be suspended for his little move there on the nether regions of Danny DeKeyser.
The cowbell.
The cowbell. That's what they're calling it now, the cowbell.
The boys.
I think that he should be suspended. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. Danny DeKeyser. Oh, you think that has
playing
a place?
Hockey. It's just
that's not hockey.
That happens.
How often do you see that?
All they're talking about on the panel last night on TSN is, Duffy seemed really up in arms about it. I disagree completely.
Well, I'm not up in arms about it.
So there's a camera that catches
it.
That used to happen all the time. I don't want to see it all the time, but once in a while, whatever. I don't think it's a big deal. Remus?
What, so tell me once in a while you can go and stick an unsuspecting guy in the boys?
Have you ever played hockey? Have you ever got... I've got stuck in the boys a few times. And I've stuck in the boys a few times.
I don't know, man.
Like, we're playing hockey. It's because of all these cameras here. That used to happen all the time. It's like, it's not a big deal.
You know what? I don't know. You got to protect, you know, the nether
regions. You should be suspended for that?
At least fine.
And they kept showing that Emelin one, too. He hardly touched Emelin.
Emelin one was a nice love tap. Man, those hurt, too. I mean, you got a flicked in there. You could be out for a week.
They're wearing protection.
To be honest with you, Corey Perry's was actually worse.
I didn't even think that was bad either.
Rich, it's a spear.
It's a spear when you smoke the guy with your stick. You hardly just pushed him.
You know, all this talk about safety, and you got guys, you know, going from behind and sneaking up behind and hitting guys in the sack. I don't know.
I don't know. I disagree completely. I think that I'm more concerned about concussions and hits from behind.
Basically, Richard Pollock of Illegal Curve says more cowbell.
David, what do you think?
I thought it was dirty. I thought the players couldn't police it themselves. I don't think the NHL needs to work.
I agree completely. And Danny DeKeyser is going to go down. It's going to be tough to play against Milan Lucic, and he's a little frustrated. And you know what? Hey, it makes for more rivalries. I don't want to see it all the time, but once in a while, let's not overreact. Everybody loves to overreact in this day and age because we have to do something.
I'm not overreacting.
Somebody's got to tweet about
it. I'm the most pro hockey and pro physical guy out of any of you guys. I love the rough stuff. But man, Lucic sticks the guy in the balls from behind unsuspecting. I'm not overreacting. I'm just saying it was cheap. And one game, I wouldn't have a problem with a one-game suspension. I guess it's a moot point because they're not suspending him.
It's a moot point? A cowbell? Or?
Well, yeah, that was. I like it.
Next question in Rapid Fire is Joel Quenneville. He grabbed the similar region when he was unhappy with a no-call on a... It was a power play in overtime off... Overtime or is it late in the third period? I'm forgetting.
Are you talking about the Ryan Reeves play?
It was overtime, right?
Overtime, yeah.
Yeah, it was a bad... First of all, bad call on Reeves on the hit on Taves, I thought. But then the Blues really should have gone down two men, and the Hawks should have had a 5-on-3 power play in overtime. But that's when you saw a makeup call, or lack thereof. They didn't make the call on the firing the puck over the glass, I thought, because they really felt bad about the call before that. In any event, Joel Quenneville was furious. He made an obscene gesture, grabbing a region below his belt, and was fined by the National Hockey League $25,000. What did you think of the lack of penalty call in that play, first off, and what did you think of Quenneville's reaction, which he's apologized for and said he's quite embarrassed about?
I thought it was great. I mean, I thought it was funny. I think I have no problem with this. The fact that he was fined for that and Milan Lucic was not fined for his, to me, I think I would actually reverse it and give him a fine for what he did and give nothing to Joel Quenneville. I think it was hilarious. It reminds me of some of the fiery coaches that we've had in the past. Patrick Waugh at the beginning of the season shaking the glass. So I have absolutely no problem with it.
David?
I was fine. I mean, it was, you know what, the reality is it was a heat of the moment thing. Quenneville's usually a fairly measured guy. I like him as a coach. I think he made it. It's an obscene gesture. I mean, again, like you said, Richard, people catch things now that would have gone on years ago that nobody would have
like
thought twice about it.
I'm going to change the last question. Getzlaff's a warrior. We know Ryan Getzlaff's a warrior. Do people have to always make a video every time somebody's caught on video? Like the Mark Bergevin stuff? Yeah. It's like the videos have jumped the shark because everybody thinks of doing it.
The problem is I don't think people watch hockey anymore. I think they just watch it to have something occur so they can make it
funny.
People
just watch Twitter. Twitter is the best at killing something funny instantly.
Yeah, like the Bergevin thing is not funny anymore.
No, it was funny for 5 minutes, and then 5 minutes later, 3,000 people tweeted about it. It wasn't funny anymore.
And they all tweet the same jokes.
There's not a lot of unique comedians on Twitter.
I'm very frustrated.
Dave, you're unique on Twitter. You're funny. Follow Dave at ICDave.
Thanks.
It's a good time.
But okay, so getting back quickly though to Getzlaff, his shot that he takes off the face,
that was unbelievable.
His wife gives birth. A lot of things happen in a short period of time. He has a beautiful goal last night on Kari Lehtinen.
Gorgeous, unbelievable.
Corey Perry, after that that stick issue, he comes down, scores a great goal.
Nice pass,
Getzlaff
too.
Has a pass on the third goal. By the way, I know Gonchar was whining about getting a stick slashed by Cogliano last night. That's great. But stop whining during the play, and if Trevor Daley is playing the man, that goal never happens.
Right.
So we didn't get into that, but that's my quick take on that one. If you're thinking of Ryan Getzlaff in terms of, I mean, he's got his cup, Olympic golds. Who do you think of old-time hockey when you see Ryan Getzlaff out there playing the way he is in the situation and the circumstances that he's had to endure?
Well, obviously the shot to the face was a big shot to the face, and what was so impressive is that he gets up and he's bleeding and he just skates right to the bench. So I think of a guy like Stevie Yzerman, who was a great defensive player in his prime and a guy that played through a lot of injuries, or even last year Patrice Bergeron playing through injuries. So I think he's a warrior, and I think Steve Yzerman is a guy that he reminds me of.
David?
It's funny. I went to a different sport. I went to Kirk Gibson. You know, I just thought, like, with the way he played, you know, on, with one leg, and you think what happened to Getzlaff. Like, I saw that puck hit him in the face, and I thought, wow, there's no way he's getting up. He got up instantly, and he went right to the dressing room under his own steam.
See these basketball players, they get cut, and they run away, and they're gone for 20 minutes. The hockey player takes a 90-mile-an-hour slap shot off the face, and he gets up without any help.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
David Manouk of LegalCurve.com is going back on Legal Curve Radio vacation with Drew Mandel's return next week. I'd like to hear what your cheer or jeer is.
My cheer is NHL overtime in the playoffs. I absolutely love overtime hockey. There's nothing better. If you want to talk about what's right about this sport, talk about NHL overtime in the playoffs. There's simply nothing better for my money.
How much money you got?
Enough.
Has he?
Well, Dave won the overtime pool, took Alex Steen, so he's got our money right now.
I have an outstanding account with Dave right now.
I'm going to cheer Rene Bork. He's had a real tough year. He was a healthy scratch many times this year for the Montreal Canadiens. Went through long stretches this year without a goal. He had two goals last night, and it just proves that once the playoffs start, it's a new season, and guys that were having rough regular seasons can really make a name for themselves and really turn their season around. So I'm going to give my cheer to Rene Bork.
You know, it gets my cheer. David Manouk gets my cheer. He comes in as a pinch hitter. It's very Ezzy of me, though. Comes in as a pinch hitter for five shows, including NHL Midweek and the Legal Curve Hockey Show, and he does a bang-up job, and Drew's coming back. He's going to replace me as host, and I think that's about time. But he's done a great job, and I appreciate all the time he's given this show.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it.
That wraps it up. I want to thank our guests, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, Josh Cooper of the Nashville Tennessean, and Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey, former assistant general manager with the Minnesota Wild. I want to thank our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, CompuStitch Embroidery and Design, and Bernstein's Deli. It's been a jam-packed 3 hours here. I can't believe it went by so quickly. Blue Jays baseball is up next. Just a reminder, NHL Midweek is no longer on. We're on vacation for the summer, but the Legal Curve Hockey Show will be on throughout the summer. 9 a.m. for the rest of the spring, then we'll just cut down to 10 a.m. in the summer during the summer months. It's been a great time. We'll see you next Saturday. Blue Jays baseball is next on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Legal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.